This is, I knew it for, I could play no more denial games within myself. And so I was just like, you know what, Sarah, you're absolutely right. This is not a safe situation. This is not a safe relationship. You're absolutely right. Let's figure this out.
Well, Matt Hammett is back with us today on Focus on the Family, along with his wife, Sarah. And we thank you for joining us. I'm John Fuller. Your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly.
John, I love hearing stories about couples who, you know, despite going through really deep challenges, they just never give up on each other. It's very encouraging, and it's such a picture of how Christ never gives up on us. He's always there with his arms wide open, ready to forgive us and redeem us. And that's the story that we started last time from Matt and Sarah, who endured many years of arguments and personality clashes. Anybody raising their hand out there?
Yeah.
You know, those clashes which led to fighting pretty constantly, and then they faced a terminal diagnosis of their baby boy. That's where we ended yesterday. And today we're going to pick up their story and explore how they stayed together, even though what they could see and feel was suggesting they should rip themselves apart.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really powerful conversation, and Matt was the lead singer of the very successful Christian band Sanctus Real for 20 years, and he's written a book chronicling their story and offering some insights. It's called Lead Me, Finding Courage to Fight for Your Marriage, Children, and Faith.
Matt and Sarah, welcome back to Focus.
Thank you.
We love having you last time, and let's pick up where we left off. You just received some really difficult news with your third child. You mentioned the dreams your little girl, your oldest, Emmy, was having for years, even before you were pregnant, about her little brother maybe dying someday. That was powerful, and how God used your daughter to speak to your heart in that way and gave you what I caught was just the courage to stick with it and let the Lord determine the days of Bowen's life, not some physician. And that had to be so hard, though.
Yeah. I mean, we always, you know, have been advocates for life. Always believe, you know, the Psalm 139, you know, that God knows us before we're born and creates us. Nobody but the Lord himself fashions us in the womb. You know, we believe he numbers our days, just as you said, Jim. And so I think for us, it was definitely first our faith, but also there was a lot of hope that we felt, and just, you know, even like the story of Emmy and these dreams that she had, you know, it's like God sometimes does work through even children, right, to strengthen our faith. And so we were resolved, despite what the physicians were saying, to see it through. And in my mind, I wanted to be strong. And so I was going to just trust and hope and not allow myself to emotionally dive into the worst case scenario.
Right.
But when that became really difficult was the night after his surgery. He had a cardiac arrest at 2:13 a.m. They called us and told us that Bowen's heart stopped beating. And we didn't even want to leave his bedside, but they said,
we weren't allowed to stay at his bedside through the night.
Like, yeah, so they were like, you've got to go get some sleep. And so when they called us, we rushed to his room. It was the most surreal moment because that worship music was playing at full blast. And there was a team of doctors and nurses around his bedside working to save his life. They had his chest literally open with their hands in between the walls of his chest, pumping his little heart to keep him alive. And we're at the bottom of his bedside just grabbing his toes and trying to hold onto what we can. After 45 minutes, they pulled us away in another room. And I just remember Sarah was almost stone cold because she had spent so much time processing this could happen. She was preparing herself, and she just was like kind of in that moment of like, here it is. Whereas I had not allowed myself to go there. And for the very first time, I remember I just like lost it.
You could hardly stand.
I could hardly
stand. You were falling. And
yeah, I just remember saying like, okay, Jesus, you're my treasure. Jesus, you're my treasure. Like reminding myself, I have to look at that and know that no matter what I lose. And then I remember we prayed for him. And the nurse who called us to tell us that his heart stopped beating actually came in that room and told us that Bowen's heart was beating again, that they had gotten him on life support and they were able to save his life. And that was news we were not expecting grateful for it, but man, you can imagine the pendulum swing of emotion.
Man, I mean, my eyes are filled with tears just listening to that. And I think the right question is the one that everybody would be thinking about is, were you shaking your fist at God? Were you, because you went from this trust at all cost to what just happened? And Lord, why did you let me down? And what's going on? Did you have time to process that?
I definitely asked a lot of hard questions leading up to it, even though I wouldn't let myself maybe emotionally process, you know, the depth of what it could feel like to lose a son. And in those moments, I think what I was prepared for actually was that part, because I, when I found out, really struggled through that entire time, and even journaled it on the blog and shared these thoughts with other people who really resonated with it, because, you know, so many people were going through the same sorts of things. So there was kind of this community that I developed online with people who were asking these same questions. And I read a lot of different books, you know, on the issue of suffering and why God allows things to happen. And so I can honestly say that by the grace of God, because I felt prepared in that moment, I was able to just look at Jesus and trust that the treasure of him being enough for me was enough. You know?
Yeah. Let me ask on behalf of those parents that did lose a child.
Yep.
They didn't have the comeback.
Yep.
They couldn't resuscitate.
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
Well, I think I may not even be able to say it.
No, it's okay.
When you, the miracle that other people didn't get is just so hard for me. Sorry.
It's okay.
It's just so hard. It's hard to find the balance of being so grateful for the miracle we received. But then I just have helped so many moms who didn't get it, and I don't know why.
Right.
So,
right.
Anyway, sorry.
No, I mean, that's the right answer. We don't understand these things. We're not God.
Yeah.
You know, we don't understand what he's doing in all of our lives and how he works these things. The one thing I do know is that those children, I believe, are in heaven.
Yes. Yeah.
And, you know,
absolutely.
God's open arms, and I just trust in that. God's heart, his grace is big enough for that situation.
Yeah.
And we need to count on that. I do need to press through because, Matt, it seemed like, no, this, I love your heart.
Sorry,
don't apologize.
The hardest part for
don't
me.
Apologize. Yeah. It's so wonderful. And I'm so grateful that you do feel the pain of other people. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
But in that way, Matt, it seemed like in the book, you get back on tour.
Yeah.
I mean, you're committing to more days of touring, and Sarah's back with two children, and this newborn that's, you know, going and struggling. And I mean, what was that about?
This was a strange moment in time for me, because I had been working on this dream, right? This music dream. I've been feeling the tension between the music dreams and the family dreams. This is the tension we write about in the book. I mean, this is the thing we all feel, right?
Right.
And in that moment, the day that Bowen had his first open heart surgery was the day that Lead Me, the song, went number one.
Same day.
Radio, the same day.
That's crazy.
So we have a number one song, which is everything I wanted, right? All the sales are going berserk, and all the charts are great. And that's what I had tried to strive for. And did I care at that moment? No. I didn't care at that moment because my son was dying. And it was such a stark contrast of those family dreams versus the career dreams, and in the end, what was really important. Now, where it gets really interesting, the success of that song ended up taking me away from my family even more. So, you know, come February, after this time we spent in the hospital, these few months of dealing with this, we take a very sick child home. They unplug him from all the monitors that had meant everything, right, for months. And said, oh, here you go. Here's your baby. It's like 10 minutes ago, we had to watch that monitor religiously. And now they just unplug it and send you home. And you're like, she's scared out of her mind as a mother, obviously, and wants to make sure she does everything right. And so do I. But guess what? The band and the work, the career is calling. And it is how I make income. That's right. I mean, that was part of it too. It's like, okay, we've taken these months off. Now it's time to, we've got a number one song. It's time to go.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the record companies probably saying, you got to get out there.
Yeah,
I mean, all these competing problems.
Yeah.
Now, you find yourself on the road emotionally. Yeah. Where are you at and what's happening with some of the people you're working with?
Yep.
This is where the story turns to the common story of what happens to a lot of men who are isolated.
Absolutely. So Sarah and I are grieving differently. And I'll make this very quick so I can move into what you're talking about. But basically, in grieving differently, her way of dealing with her grief was being at Bowen's bedside or his side in general 24 hours a day.
Caregiver.
I tried to do as much of that as I could, but I really needed her the way I grieved. Mm. And so she felt animosity towards me that I wasn't at the bedside 24/7 right next to her, that I was in her mind, I was trying to pull her away.
Yeah, Sarah.
That I was another thing that mm-hmm. needed her.
Yeah, right. Describe that, because a lot of women are going to connect with that feeling. Mm-hmm. A lot of men aren't going to really understand what Matt's talking about.
I just felt so strongly that I had to be Bowen's voice because he had no voice. And so the way I'm built, I was hyper vigilant and hyper aware and hyper available to Bowen, only Bowen.
It was all consuming.
Yeah. And I do think looking back, I could have, for sure, it was maybe imbalanced for sure. I could have found ways to balance that a little better, but I didn't know how to at that time. So.
And how did you react emotionally then to Matt's maybe not so subtle demand for your...
I thought he was selfish.
Yeah.
I mean, really, and now I see that that's not selfish. It's the way he was
coping.
Grieving.
He was
how
trying to cope.
He coped. He needed me to hold him and hug him and sit with him and be away from the bedside for even... He would even just ask for 15, 20 minutes. And it was like, no, I can't. What if a doctor comes in? You know, it was... Just we didn't know what we have never done it before. So.
Well, super stress.
Yeah,
is just, what it sounds like.
And I then, become very aware, and you flight. I fight and you flight. Kind of is what we've figured out in those scenarios. So
in ways, ways.
Matt, I want to be really careful here because you guys have worked hard to get where you're at today, and it's you know, it's in many ways unfortunate to kind of do an interview and relive your worst possible moments, and I recognize that. But at the same time, there are going to be people listening right now that are right where you were then.
Absolutely.
And they need to hear that wisdom to say, how did you get out of that? So you go back on the road. There's a new band manager. She seems very empathetic to you, and you're her superstar, and she's treating you that way.
Yeah.
Describe the emotions of that.
Absolutely.
And what began to happen.
Yeah. I mean, I was really in a place where I was, you know, we talked about a moment ago, grieving. There was a rift between me and Sarah, and I had someone who was just ready and able to speak those loving words and life,
affirmation.
What felt like me, words of life-giving words and affirmation, straight into those absences, right? Into those hungry places. And so what ended up happening is that I began to like idolize that feeling of getting that from this person, because I felt at the time I wasn't getting it from Sarah. And, you know, I was giving pieces of my heart and life and that friendship and relationship that was meant to be shared only with Sarah, those vulnerable places, I was allowing that door to be opened in another relationship.
Yeah.
And to the point where I was uncomfortable enough with it, I kept telling myself, well, there's not a physical attraction. She's older than I am. She's a safe place. But I knew full well that it was not a safe place.
Well, and to a spouse, you know, that's listening, I mean, I love that warning.
Yeah.
Because that certainly is in the early steps of what most likely would lead to something more.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, I hope people are heeding the warning there.
Yes.
Sarah, I want to make sure on behalf of women listening that, you know, you're not owning the guilt of that. I mean, again, it can sound like, you know, you weren't meeting certain emotional needs that Matt had at the moment, and therefore it was your fault in some way. And people will email us, and I just want to make sure we hit it.
And I want to make sure I hit that in no way, shape, or form.
Correct.
Is that I take full responsibility.
Right, and I appreciate that because I think so often women, you know, men that will express those things, they can misinterpret that. Sometimes, you know, they're interpreting it accurately. I know for a fact it's not true in this case. Yeah. I just want to make sure you're not the bad person here. You're coping yourself.
No.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just felt, you know, in my response to what he said, even as he was saying it, was, you were insatiable. Like, as many compliments as I could give you at that time weren't enough. That's right. What it felt like to me, because I felt very loving in that time. I felt very needy. We both just couldn't see straight. And he, I think, you know, we were just so broken and processing things in such an upside down way. So, I even look at that and go, I felt like I was enough in that moment. I mean, I'm sure I wasn't perfect, but...
You think of spiritually, you think of the enemy, you know, looking to steal, kill, and destroy. Think of it in that spiritual context of how quickly that evilness works into that vacuum.
And tricky. I mean, it was so tricky. Here we are in such a vulnerable place, and who would have thought? And I think... I would have never thought with Matthew, because it's not something we ever dealt with in the past.
But you did have kind of a bad feeling, right? You had some kind of sense.
Oh, absolutely. And I will say, absolutely. I remember meeting this person, and I had been hearing about her because I'm home, you know, taking care of kids. And, you've got to meet this person. She's so great. She's so warm. She's so everything we've been looking for. And she's my new best friend. And I'm like, oh, cool. Okay. Okay. And I'm trying to give it a try.
Right.
And I go to give her a hug, and I just felt repelled. There was a stiffness to it. And she had no questions for me. And I could just, I'm a girl's girl. I love girls. Yeah. And so I'm like, she didn't like me. There's something off there because she's not interested in me. Mm. And so immediately my spirit was like, or the Holy Spirit was like, something's off.
Yeah.
And I'm very, as I've said before, I'm very open. I'm very direct. And so I started telling him, I don't feel right about this. Something's off.
So we've got to pull this thing in. We're down to the end.
And
no. Are you kidding me? This is good. I think people have connected.
Yeah.
But we've got to kind of fast forward through how God got a hold of this, and how you got a hold of yourselves and one another, literally. Yeah. So what was that breakthrough moment? What happened for you, Matt, to say, what is going on, and begin to cleave again to Sarah as your wife?
There were some things that happened that made me aware, that I saw, that I was like, okay, this is unsafe. I knew it I could play no more denial games within myself. And so I was just like, you know what, Sarah, you're absolutely right. This is not a safe situation. This is not a safe relationship. You're absolutely right. Let's figure this out. And so we parted ways. And that was kind of the beginning of us then processing the whole thing together. Yeah. I had to earn trust back with her.
Well, right. And Sarah,
and I had to learn how to be patient with the fact that just because everything had gotten resolved, nothing crazy happened, I could brush it off and say, oh, well, it was a close call, and it was this and that, and it wasn't that, you know, look at all the things it wasn't instead of what it was.
Right.
I had to deal with the fact of what it was and the hurt that was there.
And how did that trust get rebuilt, Sarah, for you?
I just think I had to remember that isn't who he is. It was just a blip in time. And, you know, I think we did some things right, we did some things wrong as we processed it and healed from it. So I think one thing is, for women, I needed to know everything right up front, all of it. And I needed to ask questions as I processed it. It couldn't be in one conversation. It's going to maybe be a year of me going, well, what about this? Like, what about that? And I don't, like, being patient and kind, and sure, it's scratching up pain for him too, but I need to know these answers. I'm a person who needs the answers. Now, some women I know don't want all the details,
right,
and that's how they process. So maybe just, you know, that.
And Sarah's a big investigator, so I had to learn how to be patient with the fact that, like, you know, the pain of, like, why don't you trust me? It wasn't that. Or if she was asking things that seemed ridiculous even to me, you know, I had to be patient and learn how to let her ask those questions.
Sure.
And let her just feel those things and just accept it.
Right.
And then speak life and love and in a calm, gentle, understanding way.
It would scratch his shame every time I would bring it up.
Yeah.
And so there was that struggle sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can only imagine. And, you know, if you weren't agreeing on something entirely different, it was probably a useful tool.
Totally.
To come back at them and say, well,
well,
if you want to get down to it.
And even mild arguments bring me straight back to the way I felt he didn't love me. And so even to this day, if I feel like the same eyes and the same heart are responding to me that could have done what happened there, I will say that brings me back to that because I feel like that was the heart, that was the eyes, that was the action that hurt me so much. So
yeah, and again, the good news is you're restored.
Yes.
You worked through a lot of issues. In fact, Matt, you did something pretty extreme. I want to capture that, and then I want that update on Bowen. But what was that extreme thing that you did that you felt Sarah would appreciate?
So even before all this stuff happened that we're talking about, I had attention. You know, and I had that tension, the work dream, the family dream in me from the moment we had our first daughter, our first out of the four now. And over the course of time, I felt that restlessness. But in about 2014, the end of 2014, I started to feel that restlessness inside of me of how do I be the father and the husband that God's called me to be, the message of Leave Me that I was singing every night on stage.
Yeah.
How do I live this more and sing it less? And I knew that the thing that I needed to do to live the message I had been singing was for me to step away from that life that had really taken me away from Sarah and the kids, to then take the best of my life and stop giving it to something else and find a context in which I could use my gifts and my talents that was also healthy for my family life as well.
Yeah.
And so I made the decision to step away from the only thing I'd known for 20 years, which was Sanctus Real. And so spent a year trying the best that I could to honor my bandmates and honor the people who had sewed into our music, honor the people who had listened and supported us along the way. And then in 2016, on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean, played my last show with Sanctus Real and handed the mic to a new singer. Yeah. It was hard. It was hard, but it was the right thing to do. And as hard as it was what God was calling me to do.
Wow. I mean, you just said the words that are so critical to a man's heart, the right thing to do.
Yeah.
The warrior spirit. Good job.
Thank you.
Way to go. I do want to come back to Bowen and end here because this is really good. Bowen's 10 years old. You mentioned that, I think, right at the start of the show or last time. He also has picked up a knack for songwriting. Describe Bowen today and where he's at.
Well, first I want to say, you know, the doctors we talked about before who were encouraging us to terminate our pregnancy said that our life would be hard because of him, that his siblings would be worse off because of him. But I'll tell you right now that because of him, our family is stronger. Our children have empathy. Our children have compassion. Our children are stronger people, and our family is stronger because we have something in front of us that constantly reminds us that every day is precious. And he is such a precious kid. He's loved by his siblings. He loves his siblings well. You know, we often talk about Bowen's broken heart, but the truth is that we all have broken hearts. And he has physically represents us all spiritually and emotionally in this life. Sarah and I hold on to the hope that one day God will make everything new.
Amen.
Well, what a great message from Matt Hammett and his wife Sarah today on Focus on the Family. They've been so candid about their marital struggles and, more importantly, how God has worked in the midst of those and brought them closer together. On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for joining us today for Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
It's been so helpful hearing Sarah and Matt's honest story, the separation that came from being focused on different things, and the restorative work that followed. I'm deeply moved by Matt's bold decision to choose his family over his band and the beautiful story of a marriage saved because he took the hard but right step. In his book, Lead Me, Matt identifies the tension many men feel when trying to balance work and home life. You'll find Lead Me at safamily.co.za. And remember, our counselors are here to help if you feel your marriage could benefit from an outside perspective. Call 031-716-3300 or click the counseling link at safamily.co.za. We're nearing the end of SA Marriage Week, and I hope you've enjoyed the daily content and had some great conversations with your spouse. If you didn't manage to attend a church-hosted date night or plan your own, why not set one up for this weekend and make it a regular part of your calendar? Another event you might catch at a church near you is the premier screening of Truth Rising, a powerful new documentary featuring John Stonestreet, Oz Guinness, and other bold voices. Together, they expose the chaos of our post-truth culture and point to the unshakable foundation we can stand on. Truth Rising premieres in churches this week and streams on Thrive Media from the 12th of September. Watch the trailer now at safamily.co.za. Thanks for being with us today. I'm Graham Schnell for Focus on the Family Africa, inviting you to join us next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.